This is Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast brought to you by Istril and Darknotch. We'd like to thank Fantasy Flight Games for our hobby and their continued support, Drew Dallas at Card Game DB for our hosting, and the AGOT community as a whole for making this possible. Let us take you beyond the wall.
Welcome to another episode of Beyond the Wall. Today we'll have a short intro and we'll talk a little bit about the tourney results that are going on. Then we're going to talk about the actual Canadian Nationals tournament itself, the joust, the melee, some of the parting commentaries at the end, and then we'll close with some information about upcoming episodes and a snappy sign-off.
Welcome to episode 28. I've now caught up to my age in episode numbers. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Young. My God.
That said, I need to start the episode with a whole bunch of erratum. Things, mistakes I made in the last cast, clearly very, very tired. First of all, I mentioned that our contest winner was from Latvia. They're actually from Lithuania. So I'm getting my Baltic states that start with L mixed up.
That one's actually bad, Alex, for you.
It's terrible, I know. And I also mentioned certain metas that hadn't sent me data, and I sort of grouped Australia together because there were at least two major tournaments there that had given me nothing. But as someone quite rightly pointed out, the other ones had been spot on and had given me the data the day of the tournament. So my apologies, especially to the Brisbane meta. In addition to that, I had given slots to the Midwest and stretched the definition of the Midwest a bit. The people in Iowa, upon hearing that in the episode, immediately went out and dug up the tournament data from months ago and sent it to me then. So props to Iowa for the quick recovery. And then the last sort of retraction that I wanted to make was that I'd mentioned how weird it was that these tourney kits were called winter tourney kits instead of game night kits and stuff. But it turns out that the last one with the Greyjoy playmat was called the Summer Tourney Kit. So I guess this is just, they've changed the way they're labeling these. But nothing nefarious. So we do have some tourney results, the last ones that we're going to be able to talk about before we head into Gen Con.
We have the Canadian Nationals that was won by a Targ Rush deck, or a Targ Pressure and Rush deck, I guess would be a better definition for it, that a lot of people seem to really like.
Yeah, I mean, the list has been up on AGOT cards. I think it's been copied 80 times or so. This is an Heir to the Iron Throne deck that doesn't declare military challenges. And, I lost to it twice. It was my only losses of the day. It's a really solid deck, and I'm glad to see something new or new-ish emerge from this tournament. Aside from that, we had the Brawl at the Crossroads Inn in München. And that was really weird. It was won by a Targ, the Maester's Path, played by Alex Trigonakis. He forgot to put Steel Link in his deck, and so when he realized that, he went to the TO and asked, and the TO said, no, your deck list is handed in. And he still won the tournament completely undefeated without a Steel Link in his deck, without being able to stand his
mirror. His stand location.
Like, that's that. Alex Trigonakis, one hand tied behind his back, still wins the tournament.
Wow. I'm really surprised with that TO. It's the first game. He puts out his cards, and he goes, oh, one of my links is missing. I'm sure his opponent probably said, okay, just, you know, go get your links. As long as you got a sleeve of the same color and you're at the right number of cards or one over, I don't care. But the judge said no. It's to me.
I guess the judge went off the deck list. Technically, once the deck list is handed in, the surfing.
Yeah, but if you haven't started the tournament, it's not like he's scouting. He's playing Targ Maesters. It's not like he was like, oh, now I'm going to add this link.
Hey, the fact that the TO said no only adds to Alex Trigonakis' fame. So
it's true.
In the long run, it played out for him. We also got some information, and it will be coming into the annals very, very shortly, out of Stoke, where a Greyjoy Black Sails won, and a couple of smaller tournaments in Poland and in Spain. But one thing that I've noticed so far is all the data that I have in the annals for this 5.2 season, the deck that went undefeated in Swiss won the tournament.
Yeah, they just don't lose. And I think it's really showing the strength of these decks. Things like the Targ Rush Pressure, everyone knows Targ Maester Pass is a really solid deck.
Well, I
this should be a shake-up, a reminder.
I think it's a reminder that, because I only noticed this when someone had said, you know, I think there's slightly more luck base now, you know, draw has been reduced and board wipes have been reduced and you're not playing as skillfully. But it really looks to me like the players that are able to take their deck undefeated in Swiss continue to do well. Now, obviously, as the sample size increases and as the size of the Swiss tournament so far increases, we'll lose that stat. But so far, every stat I have in the annal for 5.2, if you win undefeated in Swiss, you go on to win the tournament. That speaks to me of luck isn't the biggest factor. It's player skill or deck building or whatever you think is the dominant factor or the combination of the two. But, you know, don't blame luck for your losses.
Yep. I have to agree.
So the final thing that I wanted to mention in this intro before we go on to talk about Canadian Nationals in depth is that this contest that we ran for the Battle of Blackwater Bay, where we gave out the house cards, which have been mailed out, by the way, we did a phenomenal job of getting people to like us on Facebook that hadn't already. The number of people liking us jumped tremendously. And I went and looked at some of the data for how many times people are listening to our podcast versus, say, 2C1C. And we're really getting up there to this is a similar listener base or almost the same listener base, as far as I can tell from these rough numbers. So I'm extremely happy with that. But I'm wondering if there are some good ideas to increase our listener base beyond just the people who check out these Card Game DB and They Got Cards sites. And if any of our listeners have ideas, I'd love to have 1,000 listeners consistently. And we're still a little ways from that. So I don't know if any listeners have ideas for ways that we can make this branch out a little bit further or make it reach out a little further. And I'd love to hear them.
If you come up to me at Gen Con and you tell me a good, what I think is a good listener, a way that we can increase our base, I'm going to give you my set of the Battle from Blackwater Bay cards. I only have one set. They're beautiful. They depict the death or what. You can come up to me and tell me what I think is like a really good idea that will work to increase our listener base beyond where we're at. I'll give you my set.
Contests. Maybe that's the only way. Maybe. I would advise anyone to approach Dark Nage at like 11 or 12 at night after the joust.
When everything's a good idea.
Exactly, when everything's a good idea. But yes, we definitely love to hear from our listeners specifically on that aspect, because, you know, I'm really enjoying doing the cast, and I think that we've reached a point where we've, an interesting point. We have more champions on this cast now than 2C1C does. We have a Canadian National Melee champion as one of the hosts.
Or does it count just because I have a backpack?
You have a backpack. Of course melee counts.
Okay.
You've got the word champion on something you own.
It's true. I got one of two backpacks of that type in the world.
The Canadian National stamped, yeah.
Yeah.
So we have two regular hosts, and half of them are champions.
We're joined today by a very special guest. He's the first ever Canadian national champion, both in joust and overall. So, Philippe, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into Throne?
First, hi, John and Alex. Yeah, I started playing Thrones in August 2012. Started just after seeing the first season of the show. So I really liked the show and started reading the book. Then I bought the board game first from FFG, and then I saw that they were doing a card game, so I quickly found the website to learn more about the game and joined the competition with the Montreal crew that we just formed. Basically, when I started, I met Peter like a month after, so I always play it with the people from Montreal.
Your name's actually come up on the cast before when we talked to both Peter and Salim about newer metas and how metas were growing. They gave a great deal of credit to you for being one of the driving forces behind the meta, not only in the figurative sense in that you've always been present and you've been an important force, but you're also the one who tends to drive them to things, aren't you?
Yeah. Peter sadly doesn't have a car, so basically I like to travel. I think part of the fun with the Game of Thrones is to meet new people and travel in new cities, so being alone is not so much fun, so I'm always glad that they want to come. So, I mean, I think we're not great friends, and I'm really happy to have met them through this game.
So another thing that Peter said was the fact that you're kind of one of the players that always bring these new interesting deck ideas. They say you have a lot of contacts internationally. You're active in the community, not just the English community, but the French community and some of the other boards. And I guess we could really see this with the deck that you chose to bring to the Canadian Nationals. Can you tell us about the deck?
Yes. First of all, the deck idea is not mine. I will give all the credit to a two French player called Ago and Noyo. I always read the report from the tournament they do each week in France. And I saw that this deck, Heir to the Throne, did well in one of their small tournaments. So I asked them if they could share the list with me. And they had some neat idea I wanted to try. So changed it nearly 10 cards. And I just found that the deck was really interesting. But why I choose that deck is usually I try to play deck that will surprise the meta. I mean, I knew that Star No Agenda, and I thought that House of Dream Dragon Pit will be more popular, but I never play this popular deck. So with that deck, I feel that I had a strong chance to beat those decks and to take everyone by surprise playing that.
Heck, you were even playing the plots, take them by surprise.
Yeah.
So you said you tweak cards from the version that they did. So could you give us some examples of which cards and why you tweaked them? Was it playstyle? Was it meta calls? Was it just cards you like better in general?
It's more card I like better in general. I didn't have the chance to speak much with them because I chose the decks about 5 days before the tournament. And in the list they gave me, they were playing, for example, Shadow Seer, but the deck only had two shadow cards. So for me, it didn't make any sense at all to play that. Instead of that, I took a Dothraki and Maiden that I thought had nice synergy with all the Dothraki in the deck.
Especially Khal Drogo. Kills things based on his own strength, so he can be quite fun with that.
Pretty good with the Horse Lord, too.
Exactly. And so are there any other big changes? The plot deck was about the same as their version? It was the attempt to have the high initiative to go first and to control that pacing?
Yeah, but I decided to go even more in with that idea. Because they were, I don't remember exactly which plot they had, because they were playing sorry, Red Wedding, and I didn't like that. Usually I didn't have Lady or Lord on the table to make sure it will work, and I didn't like the initiative. Also, in France, they are behind us in the chapter pack that are available to them, so they didn't have access to the Aftermath, which is one of the most important plots in my deck. And finally, a card that I found was really important was Iron Hall. They were playing two copies of that card, and I decided to play three because basically in some matchup, if I didn't find that card, I was mostly sure to lose the game.
All right, so this deck is probably what most people would call a rush deck. I happen to think somewhat differently because I played against it and it beat me on plot 7 the first time we got to it. How would you characterize this deck? Would you say it's a rush deck?
Part of a rush deck, because if the opponent is not aware, I can close game by turn 2 or 3, but for some reason I have trouble explaining right now. In some game, the deck can play until clock 6 and 7, and the deck have a strong
late game presence?
The deck have a late strong presence, mostly because of when you're going first, you always put the pressure on the opponent, and also I noticed that usually all my power are mostly on my cards. House card and not on my character, unlike I think Baratheon Rush or maybe Martel Rush. So if we take for example the games against you, I had only 3 or 4 power on Baristan Selmy and the rest was on my house, which is make me better to resist Valor and stuff like that.
So without going through every individual match, can you sort of walk us through some of the big matches or the big plays in the tournament that highlight the strengths of this deck or the strengths of this particular player?
The first three games were against Lannister player, Trevor and Adam and Melanie, not in that order, but mostly Lannister tends to have, the same tricks against my deck, and I was scared of how much Neil they will have to Neil my key characters. And sadly for them, it seems that in all those three games, I was able to put Daenerys on the board and to have their doing all their challenge without major problems. So that will sum my three first game. Then after I faced you, Alex, in the fourth game, your deck, I think, is a really strong answer to my deck. I didn't have any key comment on the game. It was a close game, and the fact that you could recur LIV2 about three or four times and against me killing Daenerys was a huge concern, because I needed to be aware that I couldn't rely on her. That's why I decided in both game against you to have you kill her as soon as possible, because I wanted you to use the LIV2 as soon as possible, because I didn't wanted to have to think about it for the whole game, keeping Daenerys standing and doing nothing.
I think the one comment that I'd like to add, I think you're right that the LIV is a hard matchup for this deck, but essentially it only takes two uses of it, maybe a third use of it, before you're at dangerously threatening levels of power. Because if we each have six power on our houses, even if I've been doing it by putting LIV on yours, it only takes one good turn of you coming at someone with claim twos, with retaliation, to really completely turn around the board with two power challenges at your disposal.
About retaliation, I didn't play that plot for all the hate game. I don't like that plot, and it will be the only one I will cut from the deck. I don't think the deck needs the two claim, and the deck really needs to be first. But I agree with what you said. Even with a one claim plot, or with the anti-throne that gave me three power challenge, yeah, you have to be aware of that giving me too much power will hurt you in the late game.
So what would you replace the retaliation with? The King's Law or something like that?
I didn't do enough testing to be sure, but King's Law is one of my choice, depending if you think the meta will have a strong shadow presence. The other plot, I like it, but the initiative wasn't too high. It's Tale of Execution, the one that your king or queen cannot be killed.
Well, it goes back to hand, yeah.
I'll come back to hand, yeah. Because Daenerys is... I hate to rely so much on one character, but yeah, Daenerys in that case is really a key part of the deck. I was playing the Heaven Calling the Banner to have her or Arryn all as soon as possible, because right. She's that important.
I guess the worst case scenario is seeing something like a Milk of the Poppy hit her or something.
Yeah, that's why also one of the difference with the deck from the French player, I put two Viserys in to make sure attachment wouldn't bother me, because a Frozen Solid on the Iron Roll would have been disastrous. And I can use Calling the Banner also to get Viserys, because it's prize one.
What were the prevalent decks in Joust that you guys ran into? Philippe, it sounded like you ran into a lot of Lannister. Now, I didn't get to play any Lannister.
And Start No Agenda. I faced two of them during the day.
And then aside from that, you faced me twice, and then Dark Wings, Dark Words once. That was your matchups.
Three Lannister, three Stark, and two Greyjoy.
See, I saw a ton of Stark and a ton of Greyjoy. There was a lot of Stark, a lot of Greyjoy. I think both houses are really strong right now. Do you have the actual stats, Alex?
I certainly do. They're already in there. I think there were 10 Stark in a field of 30, so a third of the field, and then 6 Greyjoy and 6 Targ.
Where only Martell, that kind of surprised me.
There was only one Martell. I actually did get to play the Martell, so I was fairly lucky in that I got to face Targ deck, a Stark deck, a Martell deck, your Targ deck as well, a Greyjoy deck, a Lannister deck. I got to see every house but Vera on my way up, which was fun. Although I really did fear Lannister, so it was a tough match.
Yeah, I mean, I think I know Trevor did really well with his Lannister, and some of the other guys did okay with their Lannister, but I think Lannister isn't in the greatest place right now overall. I think, you know, it's down there with Baera. I think the other houses all have several really strong builds. I'm not so sure about the Baera and the Lannister.
I mean, I don't know. I think it's... I don't have very many tournaments. I don't have a lot of data, but I think I have 2 Lannister wins so far this season. 1 Lannister No Agenda, 1 in Poland at a local 10-person tournament.
Okay.
And 1 Lannister No Agenda, 1 in Spain, played by Aoria at a 15-person tournament, and went undefeated. I think he was using Castellan as his restricted. So, I mean, there may be something there, or maybe it's just that players like Aoria can make Lannister work even when it's not...
he seems to be able to touch the yellow cards and they win for him.
I don't think Lannister are so bad. I think Baratheon is harder to play. And I tend to not notice, since it's been 2 years I played that, that strong players are usually not playing Baratheon. I don't mean that they never play it, but it seems like the less popular house for the stronger player. I don't know if you agree or disagree.
No, I do. It's one of the reasons back for New York City, the conspiracy tried to build a Baera deck. It's just, it's not played that often. They're still not in a great place, I guess.
Well, there must be something in there now that Mel's favor is back, or Mel's scheme is back. But details and details. Maybe before we stray too far from the end, did you have any highlights you wanted to specifically talk about in the matches after you destroyed me?
I guess, like, still a thing to remember, but the naval icons characters, like the rowing Fullman, or the 2-cost characters from Tar that have naval icons on power.
And yeah, rowing Fullman.
This character is I like it through the day. He is tricky in the sense that people tend to forget he have naval icons or end melee. It's happened a lot of times during the day that people were sure to win the challenge, and I could add him for to make sure the attack will succeed with Daenerys or in defense. I think it was a highlight against Stephen Simoni, because he kneel almost all his board to make sure I wouldn't win the challenge, and I just had the Pullman in the challenge, and I was able to secure the challenge with Daenerys and kill one of his key character.
I mean, I would say that was... There's a nice picture of the moment just before I completely screw up in the final, and that was exactly the same play.
Yeah.
I had knelt out 2 Marauders and a First Mate, hoping to get all 3 triggers on a power challenge, and you jumped in the Pullman that I had forgotten about the naval enhancement, and you won that challenge. That was a really important moment, and I think that probably sealed the game for you at that point.
Yeah, I think so. That's why I don't want to say that it was a highlight on my part, but the character, because I don't know, because maybe you look weak or not useful, people tend to forget it for some reason. It happened in not just the game against you, but in most of the games. And I wanted to speak about that character because I thought of cutting him to put 3 Arse Lord and something else. But I decided to keep it because I thought that I was weak on intrigue, and which is not unstealthable intrigue icons with melee, he was helping me. So that's why I keep him in the end. I didn't thought he would be that important in my victory.
Yeah, no, they're a really, really good card, but I think they're also out of a house that generally doesn't play naval icons for the black sails, with some recent exceptions, and people just, or at least I, don't keep that in mind as often as when I'm like, oh yeah, I know that Victarion, he's used in these black sails decks. I know this one, he's used in you know, the Baera black sails deck. I know that they have a naval enhancement. I'm used to controlling them, while... Clearly the Rome Poilman slipped my mind and slipped Steve Simone's mind, so at least I'm in good company.
Yeah, I think you're right. Except for that, my game, I don't have much highlights, sadly. My game was usually straightforward.
And I imagine that does make the Lannister matchup at least somewhat difficult, although you managed to beat it three times, so I guess maybe not as difficult as I would have thought.
Well, I think Harrenhal would help you defend against their Neil, and he has a pretty good intrigue presence on the board.
Yeah, against Lannister, that's why I decided to play Tree and Renal. And also, to be a dragon, it's tricky because it's a cost. So even if my opponent cancels it with his Harrenhal, I keep my standing characters. So that was the most important part for me, because sometimes I was using to be a dragon to stand Daenerys, but I was just bringing back a refugee.
Actually, that's a card that I would like to talk about, because a lot of people have been talking about Harrenhal in Joust matchups. Some people saying it's far too prevalent. Some people saying it's completely killed control, regardless of their opinions. So how much Harrenhal did you guys face in general, and how important was it in games? I mean, obviously, Philippe, in your deck, it was central to your strategy. But what about in most opponents' decks?
I saw it in half my matches. And I wouldn't say that it was game-changing in any way, shape, or form, but I would say that there was definitely a presence, that it changed the way I was going to do things. You know, especially since, like you, Alex, I was running the Live 2 build, and they could cancel that kill effect to basically kill another, you know, chuddy character, not the character I wanted. So that really put a cramp in a lot of my plans. Now, in one of my games, Harrenhal came too late. I had already used my Live, so it wasn't as big as an impact. I wasn't able to recycle it. And in the others, it affected my game once versus the Live 2. I think it depends how early you see it and how many characters you have to sacrifice. You really have to have a strong board presence to be able to pay that cost and have no problem.
I just to touch a little bit on that, because I had similar experiences. For me, the advantage of Live 2 is that, especially in the very first turn, you can interfere with a challenge, you can essentially raise your claim by one because you're going to kill off a character. Unless they have enough characters that they can survive, maybe you're doing a claim 2 challenge or even a claim 3 with Hammerhorn Raiders or Retaliation, then it didn't really matter which character they killed off to the LIV on that first turn. You could put enough pressure that they were going to lose all their characters anyway. And late game, we tended to draw into newly made lords at some point, and I love getting 2 power for playing a newly made lord.
Yeah, with that.
So I saw a little bit of Harrenhal, not actually all that much. I think it only came up in one matchup, aside from the fact that it didn't really play a lot in our first matchup, Philip, because I don't think you ever got it, but I knew that you had it, and I had to play around the fact that you might eventually draw it. In the second matchup, Harrenhal managed to close the game, but I don't think it mattered in the long run.
One thing I changed my mind with Harrenhal. Yes, it's a really strong card, but I thought it will be easier to use. Like you said, sometime I was happy that my opponent was killing his character because I was not doing military, and with the Daenerys, just to cancel Daenerys, he was killing one of his own characters, so in the end it was a win-win situation for me. Now when I want to use Harrenhal, I will try to cut more small characters just to make sure I have something to kill, because you don't want to be killing good character like Horse Lord or things like that. So that's why I added the 3 refugee and the 3 Dothraki and Maiden. And putting Harrenhal in other decks, I now make sure that when I try to rely on Harrenhal, that I have a good 6 or 9 character that I can kill without thinking twice.
Yeah, I also think that against a fast deck or a deck that applies early pressure, like either our deck or your deck, really paying 2 gold on turn 1 or on setup for something like that is not ideal. You know, it doesn't help their board presence. It doesn't start denying you power challenges.
It can really slow down the tempo.
I mean, obviously it has a place. It's a phenomenal card. But I think that people need to be very wary about how they use it. And I think that it's much more subtle than you'd initially think.
And also, I like to bait people using Harrenhal. Sometimes they don't know what you have in hand, and they look at your board, decide to cancel something. And against Simone, we were both canceling each other 2 or 3 times in a row. And in the end, I didn't want, like, to, the effect he was trying to cancel, I didn't really care. I was only happy that his character was getting killed and I could play the event I was keeping in my end.
All right, John, so we got several requests to discuss the deck that we took and that we tweaked together.
Yeah, so we took a Live 2, House of Dreams.
Now, I remember when we were first reviewing the card, we were talking about, oh, what an opportunity cost is for the other one. And then at one point, I think I dropped in this thing like, I think I could almost see it as a House of Dreams location, that it would be really fun because you could guarantee having it early on. But I don't think that deck would be very good. And over time, did our Greyjoy episode, and you decided you wanted to play around with one, and you built an early version of that, and then we've since seen it sort of validated that even a one-shot HOD location like that really can work. So since you built the bones of this deck first, maybe tell us a little bit about it?
Well, first, I can't say that I built the bones alone. I got input from both Steve Simone and Aaron Glazer while I was building it and throwing ideas. So basically, after I built the one on the show, I continued to tweak and fiddle with the deck just on and off for a couple months, and I tried different things. I took Winter in, I put Winter out, I tried really heavy claim, and after a while I just found that the draw in late games was causing me so many issues. So I started trying to figure out ways to get draw into the deck, and what I settled on basically was Bays of Ice. So that kind of changed the type of plots I could run to these high initiative plots. Now luckily, Greyjoy has some great high initiative plots. And with the introduction of the Aftermath, it really rounded out the plots. And I actually really liked the King's Law and Search and Detain because it gave this extremely positive matchup basically against any type of shadow deck, whether that would be Tarp Dragon Pit or Lanny's Tunnels. And I found that those matches, once those two plots were in there, were super easy. And I was expecting more Dragon Pit at Canadian Nationals, which is one of the reasons I thought this deck would be really good. So then I came running with the deck, and I said, Alex, we tried a Baratheon for a while. I said, Alex, let's play this Live that I had been working on. And then you, of course, got in there and did a couple tweaks that I think just brought the deck to the next level.
Well, I did a couple of tweaks, then undid some of those tweaks, and then redid a few of them. But we wound up with versions that were very, very similar at the end. I think one of the biggest differences between our decks wound up being that I ditched the Risen from the Seas and put in C6. I figured that this meta, there's so few people running Influence that C6 are very, very reliable, or mostly reliable, and that this deck needs to put pressure in the early game, especially on turn one. Turn one needs to go your way, which is what LIV2 does. However, if you're waiting till turn two to be able to use your cancels, if you're drawing dead events that aren't helping you in that first turn, and with the way people are able to cancel your saves with Harrenhal, I just felt Risen wasn't as good a choice.
Right. I stuck with the Risen. I was a little bit worried about C6. I thought there'd be more Targ in the field. So because of that, I was worried about more influence, so I didn't go with the C6.
And how did that play out for you?
Paid dividends, and one of my matches I won because of the Risen from the Sea. I was playing against a Montreal player, Salim, playing a Stark Bear Island deck, and I really needed those extra saves in order to keep board presence.
And the attachments, which offer protection.
Yes,
as well, yeah.
Exactly. Right. So that helped a lot. In my other matches, one match, I would have killed for C6 instead of Risens. I set up close to four. I had three Iron Mines as part of my setup against a Stark player, and my only characters were refugees. And he, of course, dissensioned them away, and I was looking at those Risens going, my God, if you were C6, I'd probably win this game. But since you're not, I'd probably lose, because at that point, I just didn't draw into characters.
You know, the C6 were very, very big for me all day. Also, you know, I faced a Targ Black Sails. I think I used them against that. I faced a Dark Wings, Dark Words. I think I was able to lock a Mira out in out of Shadows, although I might be misremembering that. Just generally speaking, if you need to apply early pressure, being able to cancel a Seat of Power on turn one and limit his board presence, being able to cancel a Harrenhal trigger or whatever he's trying to use to cancel your LIV, for instance, can be quite important.
So who are your all-stars in this deck?
My all-stars, I would honestly say that The deck played out very differently in several different matches. The real all-stars for me were C6, which every single game were just phenomenal. But in other games, it really, really... I'd say my second all-star is Retaliation, which sounds like a bit of a cop-out. But it wound up being much better than I expected in this deck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the big claim, too, is huge. And other than Retaliation, which I agree with, I really liked Alanis Greyjoy. A couple games I got her rolling with the Winter and the End of the Kneeling Man. And after Avowal, being able to discard basically all the cards your opponent's drawing if they don't have some kind of draw-in effect, is just devastating. Even in the places where I didn't have End of the Kneeling Man, people just kept looking at her and going, oh, another card? Like, when is it going to end? You know, between my entry challenges, the discard from the King's Road and Alanis, it really let me hold a strong presence, hand presence over my opponent, which was great.
But the way it played out for me, there were two matches in which Alanis did very well. One of those was in the cut, so I managed to essentially get him stripped to the point where he wasn't going to be drawing very much at all. But there were some matches where the first mates were just continuously fueling triggers, and I got 3, 4, even against a Targ Black Sails, I think I got 5 triggers of LIV because I was able to get these first mates through and just shut down his access to the hold entirely with LIV2. So in that match, it was the first mates, but then I won several matches in which I never got to recycle LIV, and it was just the early pressure and putting 2 power on his house so that I could start claiming power faster. That helped as well. So,
and then getting like a Victorian Greyjoy or Hammerhorn Raider to push the high claim. I think that was one of the great things about this deck. It had so many different ways that it could win. It had a bunch of good cards, and if every card you pull, you want to see.
Yeah, speaking of that, I think, you know, we did play it, and it worked out fairly well, and some of my matches were won by Winter. But I, you know, I was initially hesitant, and I think I still am, about the Winter module. And the reason for that is mostly that there are cards there that I don't want to draw. I don't want to draw a second copy of End of Kneeling Man. I don't want to draw a second White Raven. I don't really want to draw a second Alanis either. And so I feel like, you know, when it pays off and the Marauders work, the dividends are enormous and you feel really happy about it. And in addition, the fact that choking someone out a little bit with both the blockade, with possible C6, with White Raven, combines very, very well with Search and Detain. In addition to its versatility, when you're choking and messing with someone's resource base, Search and Detain is just phenomenal. Right. But I think I'd be willing to reconsider some of the decisions for having Winter and try tweaking one of the previous versions, either the version where you'd go for a higher claim because Retaliation really was much better than I was expecting, or possibly, I don't know, I think there are different ways this could be done.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's lots of ways you can play the deck. In this one, we just happen to be having a little bit of a choke element to make it harder to come back. You know, you can do, like you said, the same thing with 2 and 3 claim plots, basically holding the board state down that way.
It's true that it's hard to get card advantage in Greyjoy, and the Winter King's Roads are a very, especially when you can't run Longship Iron Victory, the other one, the Winter King's Roads and Alanis were a way to keep that card pressure, and the First Mate and Wex Pikes being able to recycle cards were also a way to keep that card advantage. So it might be very difficult to build the same level of card advantage if you're going to drop the Winter module. So maybe the Winter module is enough to overcome itself because it generates card advantage. But, you know, I also feel bad about having an Initiative 2 plot that I'm always hesitant to play if I have a Bay of Ice out. I hate giving my opponent draw from that.
Yeah. I mean, a little bit of choke is actually very powerful, too. A lot of times, the people I was playing with afterwards said, if I had just had one more gold, if you had just not canceled, you know, my first reducer with blockade, my second reducer with Miramir, it's just like, it has this great synergy with holding down the opponent.
I wonder. I think I will try a version of this that pushes the high claim element a little bit further and see if that works. Although to do that, I think the icon balance needs to change a little as well.
Yeah, you have to have more intrigue icons in order to
be able to pull that off, yeah. So any cool, fancy tricks that you wound up pulling that you think are worthy of attention? Any particularly neat plays?
A couple times I used First Mate to block an attack using Liv to kill the single person that was attacking, leaving only the First Mate in the challenge, and then triggering them to bring back the Liv immediately, which basically stopped my opponent from doing a second challenge because they figured they couldn't win it if I killed another character.
Yeah, the timing on that is very nice. The fact that it's not a response, it's a, you know, so it can't be canceled by, he calls it thinking and the like, but also the fact that the trigger, you can use it and then trigger the limited response to get it back for the next challenge. I wouldn't say that I had any particularly brilliant plays on my end. I actually had a couple of really idiotic ones, both of which cost me games. But I did see some people play against it in ways that I think are worth noting. I lost my Theon Greyjoy to an ambushed Flamekissed before the opponent counted gold. And I thought that was an excellent play on his behalf. I had to lose a character to Theon, and I chose not to get rid of Theon because I wanted to put the pressure on his one remaining character, and he Flamekissed Theon away, getting two power for that, and having meant that I essentially lost, you know, two characters that turn, Theon and one other. I thought that was particularly well played. I think what's most surprised me about Prized, and we knew it was coming to some extent, was the fact that by increasing the stakes, essentially by existing, it revalues power challenges. Because we used to sort of skip over those, especially for the first couple of turns. And now, you know, those early claim twos that you were using for pressure can now be early claim twos that you're using for power challenges.
So we talked about Joust a bunch. Do you guys have anything to say about the melee?
The field in melee, and I haven't created an annals for melee. I have had people request that specifically, but it's just too much work when the head-to-head matches aren't as interesting. So it's not as informative that you beat this one other deck or these three other decks because of the way melee plays out. The stats aren't quite as interesting. But the field overall was dominated by two deck types. It was dominated by dragons, and it was dominated by Bera.
Yep, and I think that's because Bera steals characters, and dragons are no attachments.
Yeah, the other big characters that I saw out of other houses had tended to be no attachment ones, Jaime Lannister, that kind of thing, that are safe from Mel's favor, although nothing, it's much harder to be safe from the Lysini captains, but they don't swing the board quite as much as the other ones.
Yeah, even the one Martell player I saw was running the Martell armies with renowns that have no attachment so that they could basically be secure that their characters were going to be staying on their side of the board.
This army is really strong in melee. The other deck I was working on, I decided to bring dragons. I can say a word about that later, but the other deck I was working on was Martell deck, and the army that is no attachment is really strong.
Well, absolutely. Since Martell can, you know, you can run like Game of Thrones, and then they won't kneel during their intrigue challenges and stuff like that.
One card that I saw a fair bit of, which may surprise some people, was Harrenhal even in melee. A lot of people saying, first of all, that it's a phenomenal bargaining tool. Someone wants to get an effect off very, very well. You can use that threat of a cancel as, you know, essentially table talk.
Yes, that was something I was not expecting. Now I will put Harrenhal in all my melee deck from now on.
Yeah, we were using it primarily to cancel people's saves, so that when we Valored, we could cancel other people's saves on the board to make sure that the only thing that was still alive would be our dragons.
And to make sure that Ariane's ability actually went off, and that
yes,
we could use the Valor. That was our primary focus with that. But it wound up being an interesting tool, an interesting bargaining tool overall.
And I saw a lot of Prized in melee, more than I saw in Joust, strangely enough. Where,
well, it didn't help we were both running Conquest.
This is true. I did see other people. A lot of people were running, you know, one prize guys. That's still one power they're giving out to everyone. I remember one time after a vow, we were like, okay, so he gets two, he gets two, he gets two, and then these two people will get four, and then someone used Infamy to steal two power from someone else. It was like a six-power swing for the Lannister player because of Prized.
That's good.
Yeah.
Well, I think that may be part of the reason why almost all of my matches, with the exception of one, finished, you know, like 15, 13, 12, 10. Really a lot of points for the second, third, and fourth position. There were very few blowouts that the tables I was sitting at. Did you guys see any other decks from those archetypes that are worth bringing to the fore?
I mean, people were playing really standard, other than you and I, Alex, were playing really standard dragon decks with Rush, some with Beleriand, some without. I saw that Harrenhal really made Beleriand have much less of a punch. People were either canceling the reducer to bring him in or just his effect itself.
Lannister deck did make the top table, and that was Lannister HOD Mander. I still don't know how he made it work, but I played at a table with him, and you almost underestimated the deck entirely. and eventually he flipped into Winter Festival, and none of us could believe he'd won. It was actually quite quite good. In fact, none of us could believe he'd flipped into Winter Festival, but we'd had so many bungled orders at the table that he was back onto his first squad again. So I was quite impressed with that. I saw a lot of
Neil. It was surprising. Yeah, I saw a Bleeds deck.
Yeah, congratulations to Trevor. He was the one playing that deck. And honestly, that was one of the decks I think was really original, and really I'm really happy when I see original deck doing so well. So congrats to Trevor.
Yeah, and
for sure.
People were calling him the people's champion. I heard.
Yeah, for sure.
I think this is one where it may be worth discussing our deck, because I was quite impressed with what you'd come up with and what we managed to tweak in the end. So, John, let's tell us a little bit about this creation of yours.
Sure. I created two decks, actually, originally when we were on the cast and we were doing a card review, and I think we looked at one of the cards that said, when there's another Martell, when there's a Targaryen character in play, this guy's immune to plot effects. And I said, I have to build a deck. I'm going to put him in a deck right away. I was serious. I put him in the melee deck. And I had a melee deck using Greyjoy where basically I would sack land so that Asha could not be killed, so that all my opponents would have power. And then I would rotate into Val. Again, Martell Conquest to Greyjoy in that case. But after I talked to Alex a little bit, he said, it's not that good. It'd be better in some other form. Probably the cannot be killed dragons. I had already built a shell, so we just hopped on board with that. So we had all these great little control things from Martell, plus a bunch of dragons that couldn't be killed, and a couple of little chuds that couldn't be killed. The whole idea of the deck would be to play all the cannot-be-killed dragons out on turn one, which we could do pretty reliably with Exchange of Summoning Seasons and the events to search for the dragons, and then basically use Arianne to Val the board and be the only person with any dragons left. After that, we played a bunch of plots to basically lock the board state, like Fear Winter and Blockade, so that our opponents couldn't come back and we would just basically win.
Yeah, when I first saw it go off against me in our melee test matches in the Greyjoy version and suggested a slightly different version that you already had built, I thought it was a really, really shaggy kind of way to take the melee. And to be fair, either because I'm exhausted or you put too many restricted cards, the first iteration of that deck was illegal in six ways.
Seven, because I had a plot I wasn't allowed either.
Right, exactly. So we had House Targ only cards all over the deck, despite the fact that it was Martell Conquest of Targ. I think it had additional restrictions. It was a bit of a shambles to start with, but it was a blast to fine tune, to come up with a deck that could, milk things like the Brimstone in to give the dragons more icons and still play with some of the Martell stuff, and to play Conquest in melee, which just felt so cheeky.
Yep, for sure.
And so did the deck work as you had planned it to, John, for you?
Every single time, even in the final table now. One of the drawbacks of the deck is that it makes the other dragons by the same name unkillable. So
I remember
other
when
people,
I pointed that out to you, like the 2 days before the tournament, I'm like, you do know that this makes other people's dragons cannot be killed too. And they're like, should we reconsider the deck? It was too late at that point, but it was like, oh dear.
You made me cry.
Yeah, I did.
But it just really required a different play strategy. You actually didn't play your dragons, T1. You'd Val, kill everyone else's dragons, and then not do Fear Winter, then play out your dragons, and hope for the best. So yeah, the more dragons in the field, the less effective that deck is, for sure.
But again, congratulations to you, because I was not expecting a deck like that in melee. So
John has not played it up yet, but John was the melee champion. He took the entire tournament, and he, you know, straight up won three tables and placed second at the another one, but he won the final table as well. And that final table had two other dragon players at it. So he was making their dragons cannot be killed and still managed to pull off the win.
Congrats.
Thank you. I really enjoy the melee format, as long as people are having a good time and joking around. And I think the final table was just such a good time. It was one of the best melee games I played in a long time. And I think everyone had a good time at it. There was a lot of laughing, some jokes. You know, the people were going back and forth on who they were picking on. They started off by beating up on Simonia because he came out a little too strong. And then, you know, the other dragon player, because without me playing my dragons, I'm not much of a threat. So at one point, you know, everyone vowed with forgotten plans and stuff to make sure that the board could get wiped. It was quite a lot of fun.
With fortified position, I mean.
Fortified position, yeah. Sorry, my fear of winter got forgotten planned.
Everything went awry, and yet you still managed to pull out a win.
Well, I think, you know, when everything's going awry from you, no one comes and smacks on you because, well, everything's already going bad for you. So there was a lot of back and forth from the other players.
I think it's important for us to mention, because it was brought up, at our third melee table, both John and I sat at the same table and across from two other players. And because of the way that our decks synergized, it made for a very short and very one-sided match in which it was essentially a contest between the two of us for first, because our dragons helped each other. And so there's a thread, if you want to read more about these details on I Got Cards, with talks of collusion and these other things. And so we've discussed this at great length on I Got Cards, if that's something that you're interested in. I don't think we'll rehash it too much over here, except to say that you tried desperately to convince me to flip for Fear of Winter, or not flip Fear of Winter turn two, and there was no way I was going to let you walk away with that game with claim two.
Well, I mean, for me, that was my only hope of winning, because you had a better board position. You had the stand locations were the big thing.
But I certainly see where their concerns are coming from. Strictly speaking, if you read through the rules, deck building is supposed to be an individual decision, they say, and you're not supposed to build collectively in order to manipulate the field. I think that anyone that says that bringing, you know, two of the same decks is manipulating the field and stretching things a bit. But it's true that at that table, I knew every card in John's deck and he knew every card in mine. I guess that gives us an advantage at that table. So there certainly is, there's a topic for discussion there.
I had two closing comments on melee. One thing, it was my first time playing melee competitive. I didn't cut that talking skills was so much important. I know that often you hear that on podcasts or you read that on articles over the internet, but to live it, I mean, on my third game, I was last and I was going to finish last, but I was able to convince Steven Simoni to help me, and I was able to secure the second place. So that's really important in melee. So if you plan to play melee, don't be shy. Try to talk at the table. It's really important.
All right. Any big parting thoughts about tournaments, the way it was run, the decks you expected to see?
Well, I think I couldn't leave without saying props to Danny, the TO. It was for our first national tournament in Canada. It was my most exciting tournament. And even if I went to Gen Con last year, I didn't know much people when I started to play the game. And I think the tournament was awesome.
So I'd like to add a couple things. Yeah, definitely props to Danny. He did a great job. But I also thought it was quite interesting that he wound up using Challenge for the online software for doing the pairings, because there were several people who were then able to follow the tournament, all the pairings, just as in real time, which I thought was kind of neat. And then another thing that I thought was really good about this tournament, it's that the final match had the Joust Championship riding for it, obviously, but it also had the overall, that the person who was going to win overall was going to have won at least one other part of the event, and it really would mean something, and I'm very glad it did. I need to, before you do whatever you're about to do, John, give a props that I was told by many people that I had to do, but it's a pleasure to do because I was going to do it anyway, and that's to thank John Andrews, who played host to about 15 people at his house for a barbecue the night of the melee. He also had people sleeping over at his place that night, cooked breakfast for everyone the next day. He was instrumental in sort of making there be an event outside of the actual game and having everyone hang around afterwards, testing, playing card games, drinking, eating, and I had a blast. I also got my first real night's sleep in 3.5 weeks, which hopefully means that's why I did okay in the joust.
You did well, Alex.
Yeah,
John, I really wanted to thank you for all. I mean, when I started the game, you were like the most iconic person in Canada, so I really wanted to be like you a bit.
Well, now you're the national champion, so now I want to be like you.
Yeah, that's right.
But you're doing so much for the game, the podcast, but you're always up to give advice for people. You're posting a lot on... So, I mean, thanks a lot.
Thanks, guys. You're embarrassing me now, but thank you. I think that's one of the best things about Thrones. When we travel, the community is so open. You know, they always try to find places for people to crash or suggest cheap hotels or ways to cut down on costs because, you know, if you travel 3 or 4 times in a year for Thrones, it can be expensive. And so, you know, reducing those costs helps to, people to go to more events. And I think everyone is always happy to have more people at their events.
Yes.
All right, so John, what do we have planned over the next couple of weeks?
Well, you're going to be at home and cry, I think, probably for about 6 days.
And you're going to be?
At Gen Con, having a really good time.
And using our credentials to be to get a press badge, too.
Yes, I did. I'm really hoping I can get to talk to some of the people from the HBO show. I think that would be awesome. But I don't know what the likelihood of that is. They probably want to talk to more important people than me.
So what does that mean for the show? You're basically gone all week.
Yeah, so I don't even get back until the Monday. So I think we're going to record really late that Monday.
All right, so we'll try to get that episode up that same day, still the Monday, still the day we normally get it up. But we do have to do editing, recording. If flights are delayed, there'll be delays. So please keep that in mind for next week's episode. But hopefully we'll have a post-Gen Con report really as soon as possible, and any information pertaining to Thrones that came out of Gen Con.
Yeah, and I'll be a giant zombie, so it'll be fun to listen to me.
Oh, I'll just prod and poke. It'll be like pulling teeth, but yeah. Surely I can get information. But speaking of news that should come out of Gen Con, we were talking about that. I think they were expecting the Adair message, the last chapter pack, to come out of Gen Con?
Yeah, that's what I heard. I heard that they were going to be releasing it in their store at Gen Con, which is awesome, which means I get to pick it up before everyone else because I have my press badge. Oh, yeah.
You don't even have to do the lineups, yeah.
No lineups, yeah. We get in an hour before everyone else to the dealer's hall every day.
But that means we need to get a CP review up at some point.
It's true. I guess we better do that ASAP.
Well, as soon as you pick up the pack. Give me a call on Skype that night, and we'll try and get the episode up. I'll do all the editing, but we'll see if we can get that up there.
All right. Maybe I can bug some of the people that are there at the convention to come on.
So if some of our listeners want to hunt you down, you'll be the extremely tall guy wearing the Beyond the Wall shirt?
Yeah, for Mealy, that would be the plan. Not just tall, just the really big guy. Is that a nice way of saying I'm fat?
Rotund.
I'm the really tall, fat guy with the Beyond the Wall shirt.
Intimidating? Why can't they hunt you down in that shirt and joust? You won't wear the same shirt?
No, that's gross. Yeah, I like to shower. Like, I'm a big guy, so showers are good. I suggest everyone going to Gen Con shower regularly.
I thought that was against the rules. It's Gen Con. It's a group of nerds.
Shower regularly.
All right. Well, for those of you who are heading out, please pester John. Get to know him. He's a great guy, despite what you've heard on the cast. It's a real shame that I can't be there this year. Planning just didn't work out for it. I'm still planning to be there at Worlds.
So I was a little...
You get to meet tons of our fans, and I get to pull teeth and try and keep you awake long enough to record on Monday.
Yes, and I'll try to send Alex some kind of updates every so often. I'll probably get other people that have better data plans than me in America to send him info.
Perfect. All right, well, thank you very much for listening, people.
Why am I doing this? I don't even know.
Well, this isn't even the end, is it? Is this the end? I thought this was the beginning.
No, this
should not be sign-offs in the beginning.
This is definitely the end.
Thank you for listening to Beyond the Wall. If you have any comments or would like to be featured on the cast, please let us know by email at beyondthewallpodcast@gmail.com or through Facebook at Beyond the Wall Podcast. If you've enjoyed the music, check out more of Antti Martikainen's work at the link embedded in the chapter data. See you all next week.